What is the concept of population control, and does it have a basis in reality? Who is perpetrating the idea of population control, and how have they accomplished their goals so far? I am Muzaffar Haider, and this is The Machinations. When it comes to population control, we have to understand that those in power do not want you to have children. Before we dive into Dr. Kate Godfrey-Fawcett's research, we'd just like to make you aware of something that perhaps you didn't know about before. They're known as the Georgia Guidestones. The Georgia Guidestones are a mysterious granite monument erected in 1980 in Georgia, the United States. Now, this structure is sometimes referred to as the American Stonehenge. Upon the stones are written a kind of new Ten Commandments for the New Age, written in English, Spanish, Swahili, Hindi, Hebrew, Arabic, traditional Chinese, and Russian. Sister Zainab Thani is going to read these 10 guidelines for us.
Thank you, brother. Inscribed on the stone are the words, "Let these be guidestones to an age of reason," with 10 guidelines written, which I'll just read. 1. Maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. 2. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. 3. Unite humanity with a living new language. 4. Rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. 5. Protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. 6. Let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. 7. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. 8. Balance personal rights with social duties. And 9. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. 10. Be not a cancer on the earth, leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. Now, it's important for us to remember that such people often use delightful language to present something quite sinister. If we say that the population of the Earth today is 7.5 billion people, then in order to maintain humanity under 500 million implies that 7 billion people must die or be killed. Population control is a lot about depopulation. We must recognize that as well as resources and political conflicts, there may be other hidden motives behind the wars we see around us in the world today.
Thanks, sister. Now, how weird is that? Now, some might pass this off as conspiracy theory. Okay, cool. You explain why the Georgia Guidestones exist, why they were made, and why a lot of the policies being pushed by the West today appear to advocate for population control. The US is undoubtedly the most powerful country in the UN, and its main concern is to reduce world population. The Kissinger Report of 1974 was the turning point for this depopulation strategy. It claimed that US national security was contingent on the introduction of population control measures in underdeveloped countries. The International Planned Parenthood Foundation, the IPPF, was one of the main UN partners for this strategy. In what amounts to blackmail, the US coupled its development aid to programs for abortion and sterilization, and the United Nations Population Fund, the UNFPA, was the main organization involved in implementing such programs. It had 300,000 Peruvian women sterilized without their consent and contributed to China's one-child policy. Programs were portrayed as humanitarian aid to needy countries and confused people with linguistic sleights of hand using altruistic terms such as health, freedom of choice, women's empowerment, unmet needs, quality services, and reproductive health. Reproductive health services is the Trojan horse term for the contraceptives safe abortion and sterilization. The deception involves using ambiguous yet positive-sounding words to push clear objectives that would not otherwise attract consensus. In 1994, the breakthrough in reproductive rights occurred at the UN Population Conference in Cairo. The policy on population control was rolled out, but its success has been dependent on the political leanings of the US presidential administration. And of all the presidents, no one has fought so radically for the implementation of the feminist homosexual agenda than Barack Obama and his first Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, who set up the Global Health Initiative. The world's super rich, including Rockefeller, Gates, Bloomberg, etc., have financially backed the population control programs, having met and concluded that the world has too many poor people. They wanted to ensure that their number was reduced by providing reproductive health services and subsequently founded the Good Club. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation also directed its energy and resources to reducing the world population in poor countries by funding the sterilization drug Sinoplant 2.
First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. But there we see an increase of about 1.3. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. In this year's annual letter, Melinda and I take the toughest questions we get asked and give our answers. One that's come up for a long time is, as we make the world healthier, is the population going to get so big that feeding everybody and maintaining the environment is going to be impossible?
We have to understand that this entire idea that the world is too overpopulated and that there's not enough resources or space on the planet Earth, therefore we need to depopulate the Earth, i.e. get rid of people from the planet, is false.
According to the most recent United Nations estimates, there's currently a whopping 7.6 billion people in the world. Imagine putting all those people in one place. First and foremost, we want to be comfortable, right? I don't know about you, but I don't like elbows poking my sides or getting my feet stepped on. So, to keep everybody comfy, we'll give each one the same amount of space they'd have if they were in a casket standing on its end. Morbid, I know, but it helps with the calculations. A standard-sized casket is 84 inches long, 28 inches wide, and 23 inches high. But since we're going to be standing them up straight, we're only concerned with height and width. So, each of our caskets will take up about 25 square inches of space. With 7.6 billion of us, that adds up to 190 billion square inches, which equals 47 square miles. Not as impressive as you were anticipating, right? Me too. So, no, we wouldn't take up an entire continent and not even a whole country. We'd fit into just 3/4 of Liechtenstein, a tiny country in Europe that's roughly the size of Washington, D.C. Actually, D.C., with a total area of about 68 square miles, is even a tad bit bigger than Liechtenstein, which has an area of just 62 square miles. You know what? We might be more comfortable if we spread out a little more. We'll move away from Liechtenstein, though, and choose somewhere we'd have a bit more wiggle room, New York City. It even has distinct boroughs to make division easier. Approximately 590 million people can fit in Manhattan, 1.4 billion in Brooklyn, 2.89 billion in Queens, 1.3 billion in the Bronx, and 1.51 billion in Staten Island. With these numbers, our living situation would look like this. Europeans could go to the Bronx, North and Central Americans to Manhattan, Africans, South Americans, and Oceanians to Brooklyn, Chinese, Indian, and Japanese people to Queens, and the remaining Asian countries to Staten Island. If you were to take all the land being used to raise livestock and put it on one continent, it would take up all of Africa. In fact, it would actually be greater than Africa, between 8 to 9 billion acres. And if we did the same thing for crop production, it would take up an area about the size of South America.
It's just scientifically, geographically wrong to suggest that the planet Earth does not have enough space or resources for the entire human race.
At the density of Singapore, we could fit the entire human race into just the states of Texas, Oklahoma, and Louisiana, already considerably smaller than at the New Orleans density. But we're going to keep on getting even smaller. At the density of Manhattan, we would be looking at a city about the size of Ecuador here in South America. And if we had a city with the same density we see in Manila, then everybody in the world would fit inside the US state of Missouri. But to get even more frightening and claustrophobic, our global city with the same density seen within the Dharavi slum in Mumbai would be about the same size of New Jersey. And finally, at about the absolute real-world limit, if we built our global city with the same population density as Kowloon Walled City, we would fit every single person in the world into an area about the same size as Palestine, which itself is only about half the size of the Tokyo metro area.
In 2012, in London, Melinda Gates and the British government held a family planning summit at which 2.1 billion euros were pledged for a contraception and sterilization initiatives in poor countries.
But it also marks a new beginning for all of us. First, we are bringing far more resources, as you will hear today, to this effort than's ever been done before. It's an effort that's being led by the developing countries themselves.
UNFPA would implement the program, which would be provided by the IPPF, the world's largest abortion organization. However, there is evidence to suggest that fertility rates are actually reducing. The UNFPA thus use scare tactics of overpopulation in order to raise funds. Their agenda is tantamount to global racism and implies that only the wealthy are allowed to reproduce. Part of their depopulation agenda is the very notion of abortion as a human right, which Sister Zainab Thani will discuss in more detail.
Thank you, brother. A previous episode on the key protagonists of the sexual revolution ought to have made it very clear how disturbing and despicable the act of abortion is, and how it is being promoted through nice-sounding yet hollow slogans like pro-choice, freedom. Abortion became seen to be a human right through the persistent use of repetition in order to create the false impression that reproductive and sexual health rights were binding components of the human rights treaties already in existence. At a networking conference at Glencove in 1996, it was agreed that treaty monitoring bodies could convert soft norms into hard laws. The UN and NGOs exert oppressive pressure on countries that are not willing to implement their gender bundle, which is abortion, sexualization of youth, and LGBTI rights. The NGO lobbyists then provide committees with arguments and strategies for converting right to life into right to kill, abortion. Globally, around 40 million children each year are killed in the womb before they can be born. To put this into perspective, this is roughly the equivalent of the population of Sudan and larger than the population of Canada that is being wiped out on an annual basis. There's no binding international law establishing the right of women to kill unborn children, but it is constantly brought about through confusion of ideas, obscureness of strategy, working in the background, defaming opponents and marching ahead according to a country's condition. If abortion is illegal in a country, they first legalize therapeutic abortion in limited cases. The top lawyers from the NGO then take the case to the Supreme Court, a European Court of Human Rights, and the High Court then imposes on member states and lower courts a new legal interpretation that undermines or reverses the previous law. The next step to legalizing abortion as a human right is made possible through ideological seduction, pressure on national politicians, linking financial aid to reproductive health programs, children's sex education, distribution of condoms, media propaganda, cultural activities. After World War II, the UN was the beacon of hope for humanity. And now, within a few decades, it is spearheading the cultural sexual revolution.
Stay tuned for more, inshallah.
Hi everyone. This video is going to be about the gender spectrum.
The whole society is being gendered.
76 genders.
Excuse me, it's ma'am. It is ma'am.
You have a belief that this child wants to be a little girl. You have a belief that this child wants to be a little boy.
So it's basically a guide for sexual activists.
If you speak out,
right.